tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 20th of March 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. I do apologise for not being here yesterday, and I am very grateful to Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson for producing a solo podcast, but I am back here today, and we do have our regular Friday special guest with us today, Mr. Grandpa Dan. Grandpa, how are you doing, sir? How is life treating you?
I'm feeling very special. So it's the special guest is feeling very special. We were just talking before starting about trends in the economy. And yeah, they're very special in a downward fashion. We are definitely in those interesting times in the Chinese proverb sense.
Definitely interesting times. And we were just talking about Iran before this, and the insight that you were giving me there, Grandpa, I thought was excellent. That would have made a good podcast on its own. But instead of talking about Iran today, we are going to be talking about something that is happening in Wales. And I'm taking this article from the Daily Mail, and the headline is: Statues of old white men like the Duke of Wellington and Admiral Lord Nelson could be destroyed because they may be offensive to a diverse modern public, the Welsh government advises. Statues of historical old white men such as Lord Nelson and the Duke of Wellington could be removed from public view in Wales in order to set right the historical narrative and prevent offence to a diverse modern public. Monuments have been subject to an audit in Wales since the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020, when a statue of slave trader Thomas Picton was removed from Cardiff City Hall. The audit's subsequent anti-racist Wales action plan is due to publish guidance this month and could name monuments to be moved in a bid to recognise, quote, historical injustices, close quote, such as the legacy of the slave trade, the Telegraph reports. So they're basically going to do away with white history just to appease the 5% of Wales that aren't white. And I mean, it's only in the major cities that Wales is like that anyway. The rest of Wales is 99% white. So just to please the 5% of Wales, which are no longer white, they're going to remove these important statues of great heroes. And the excuse for doing that is because there's a connection to slavery. Well, slavery was just the old system of employment. We have a new system of employment now. It's not that different from slavery. It's just that we get a chance to spend the money ourselves that we make. In slavery, it was the slave master who spent the money himself on buying the house to put the slave in, and buying the food to feed the slave, and buying the clothes to clothe the slave, and paying for a creche to look after the slave's children, and paying for the slave pension. Everything was purchased by the slave master, whereas today we go out and purchase it ourselves. So we have this grand illusion of choice. And really, that's the only difference, as far as I can see. We still need to have all these things. I mean, over here in Britain, you could be paying like 60% of your wages just for a mortgage, just for a roof over your head. So in slavery, you had a roof over your head, and you could make things and sell things. And the way I see it, it was just the old system of employment that existed throughout the world. So just because people were connected to the old system of employment, they now need to be removed from public view in order to please this new population that Wales has been importing into the country. Oh, and of course, yes, and this is down to Black Lives Matter. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, as you know, while you were away, I was doing the Monday Daily Nationalist, and I called it Daily Mail Monday. So I'm quite familiar with Daily Mail articles. And I just have, you know, you have this rhetorical question. What is up with the Daily Mail and their idea of having a headline? You know, because a headline is supposed to be kind of one or two lines that grab your attention. And the Daily Mail, one thing that drives me crazy is their headlines will be like a paragraph long. You know, it's like that's not how it's not how you do a headline. It amazes me that the UK they're talking, they're still doing Black Lives Matter, which is 6 years ago. Nobody's doing that anymore. Not really. Not like it was then. Reminds me of like, you know, when you were in high school, junior high, and you had the popular kids. And the U.S. was the popular kid in the West. And the popular kid in the West does the trends, you know. Everybody in high school or junior high, they look to see what the popular kid, you know, what music they're listening to, how they're doing their hair, what kind of clothes they're wearing. And then the less popular kids, they try to follow the trend so they look popular too. And then you would always have the subset of kids that were way behind, and like the popular kids have way moved on to something else, and they're still back there sporting Jordache jeans and a mullet, and they just look silly, and they act like, yeah, we're in with the in crowd. And it's like the in crowd quit doing that in this case 6 years ago. So it just makes the UK look silly, especially in the middle of, you know, these are real serious times, and you know, economically all over the world. And you have the BLM thing, that sort of stuff, these issues, you know, these are problems made up for a society that's enjoying abundance. You know, I always say that, you know, if people don't have real problems, they'll make problems up, because it's just in our nature, you know, struggling and overcoming things is in our nature. And see, if you have a time of great abundance, people just make up a thing. They make up problems. You see rich people and they'll, you know, and you're as a poor person, you look at them and say, this guy's got it made. And yet they'll bellyache and moan about, oh no, you just don't know. I have all of these problems. What kind of problems do you have? I'm so depressed. You're rich. Why are you depressed? What do you have to be depressed about? Oh, well, I have to take these pills just to deal with life. And they're just made up problems. That's what you have. It's made up problems. Only we have real problems. And the UK has a lot of real problems. The UK government is completely illegitimate, has no popular support. And under normal circumstances, the Starmer regime would have already collapsed. And yet they're doing this. Like who even takes this seriously? Now you hit on something that I've been talking about for a minute, and I'm really glad you did. And I just kind of want to I'll keep my monologue as short as I can. But the slavery thing. You know, there's a saying, one of the most clever tricks the devil ever played was convincing people he doesn't exist. And you hit on this with slavery and employment. If you work at a regular wage job, you're a slave. You know, I mean, you have the freedom to quit and go work for another slave master, but for all intents and purposes, you're still a slave. As you just pointed out, Sven, you know, in the slave days, you know, the reason slavery was done away was not a moral reason. They frame it that way because it looks better, but that's just rhetoric. They did away with slavery because it's cheaper to employ people. As you've pointed out, if you owned slaves, you had to provide their food, their housing, clothing, health care, so on and so forth. You know, there's this Hollywood notion of, you know, they would just go out for giggles and abuse the slaves. It's just that. It's just Hollywood made up nonsense. They invested a lot of money in these people and they had to put money into them. Now they pay you a wage, or basically arbitrarily decided by the employer. Whether you can afford a place to live and food and clothing and gas to drive to work is not their problem. That's all on you. And if it's not enough money, you got to go out. You got people now working two or three jobs just to try to buy food and keep a roof over their heads. You know, so it's still slavery. You go to work, you do what you're told. You show up when you're told you show up. You leave when they tell you to leave, and you follow orders. It's no difference. It's literally no different, except now you have to worry about your health care. You have to worry about your food. You have to worry about your clothing. I'm not advocating slavery. I'm saying it never went away. They just dressed it up so that you don't think it exists. Everybody is slaves, and they're talking about slavery like we did away with slavery. No, they didn't. They just found out they found a cheaper model to where it cost them it cost them less money. Like they've had a push here in the U.S. for the last several years. They call it the gig economy. This is the next step of slavery, by the way. They call it the gig economy, and it's highlighted with things like Uber, DoorDash, you know, these delivery services. And people get looped into this because they think they're making money, because they don't understand that after they pay taxes, after they wear out their car, after they buy gas, especially now, they're not making money. And I tell people, it's like, look, if it was profitable to deliver the food with delivery vehicles, these companies would do that because it would be profitable for them. It's not profitable for them. It is profitable for them for you to carry that expense, to buy the car, to insure the car, to put gas in the car. It's more profitable for them for you to carry all of that liability on all of that expense. And they just get the benefits of the delivery service, and it doesn't cost them but a few pennies to throw at you. Because most of it, the people that are doing that, I'm kind of getting on tangent. I'll wrap this up. I'm sorry. But yeah, it's the slavery thing is the point I'm hammering down. You know, it's more cost effective. It's cheaper for them to do that. And all the while, the people think, oh, I'm free. We did away with slavery years ago. When in reality, we all still slaves.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there. If you're hungry, it's not your employer's problem, is it? If you're a slave and you're hungry, then it is your employer's problem to sort the problem out. If you have a possession and the slave's worse in it as a possession, you're not going to mistreat your possessions. You're not going to mistreat your prized tractor, which you need to work in the fields nowadays. And what they needed back then, they needed a human workforce that were capable of working in the fields. White people weren't capable of working in the fields because it was too hot. Whereas black people were acclimatized to that heat, and they could work in the fields, and they worked well. They were good at their job, which is why they were purchased for a high price, and they were seen as adding value to a man's estate because he owned so many slaves. They were his possessions. You're not going to mistreat your possessions. I think the instances where slaves were mistreated, and they were mistreated, that was the exception to the rule. It wasn't the rule generally, and also because the rules were set down by the Bible. And these were God-fearing men. These were God-fearing Christian men that treated their slaves in the way that you were told to treat slaves in the Bible, which is treating them well, which in a lot of instances is treating them better than an employer would today. As I say, if you go hungry today, it's not your employer's problem, but it is the slave owner's problem. Getting back to this article here, the plan is an effort to uplift the positive impacts of minority communities in Wales and change the alarming lack of diversity within public commemorations. Well, what is the positive impact of minority communities in Wales? That they're not happy with our statues? That they have to pull, all the statues have to be pulled down to please them? I mean, surely if they wanted to uplift the positive impacts of minority communities in Wales, they would list some of these positive impacts, not use it as an excuse to destroy the history of the country. And why should the lack of diversity within public commemorations be alarming? As I say, Wales is 95% white. There was a small black community, I think, in Cardiff at the end of the First World War, and they were still here, and there was problems. There were race riots at the end of the First World War because of this. So we did have some black people here, but as only a tiny, tiny, tiny amount. Why would you expect to see diversity within public commemorations when black people have only been in Wales for about 120 years? I mean, it's not as if there are lots of black philanthropists that set up homes for the poor and the oppressed and schools and trust funds and all these things like that in Wales. They just didn't do that. That's why there's a lack of diversity, not because the Welsh people are racist. Audit results published in 2021 named Welsh statues of white men linked to the slave trade and the British Empire. Well, everyone who's British was linked to the British Empire. And this included Welsh explorer Henry Morton Stanley, who the audit found committed crimes against black people. But wasn't Henry Morton Stanley sent out to Africa to find David Livingstone, the great anti-slavery campaigner? I mean, how can they turn that around and then say that he committed crimes against black people? I mean, I believe it was a member of Henry Morton Stanley's team that recorded the great injustices of the Congo slave trade. And we have an Albion Narrations taken directly from the eyewitness account of what was going on in the Congo slave trade. It seems to me that they're just attacking white people here, looking for any excuse, because you can find connections between any white person and the slave trade from 200 years ago, just the same as you can find any connections between black people and the slave trade, as I say, because it was the ancient system of employment. It also highlighted statues of historical figures such as Admiral Lord Nelson, Sir Francis Drake, and the Duke of Wellington, who it said opposed the abolition of the slave trade. And all of those people there, we cover them in our Greatest Britain series here at Radio Albion, because they were Great Britons. This is attacking our heroes, basically. It identified, and also, as I say, Henry Morton Stanley and David Livingstone. David Livingstone was against slavery, and I think Henry Morton Stanley must have been, because he went out there to go and find David Livingstone. So how can they say, oh, they oppose the abolition of the slave trade? You would have to look at the reasons for that, and it might have well have been that this is the way we have developed for looking after these people, because in the Congo slave trade, they were used as human sacrifices. They were eaten, cannibalized. The horrific things went on in the Congo slave trade. And instead of that, they purchased these slaves, took them to America and fed them and looked after them. The difference between the African slave trade and the American slave trade in the way that the slaves were treated is like chalk and cheese. It's entirely different. It identified 209 statues, street names and other monuments which commemorate people who were directly involved in the slave trade as heroes. And I say most of that is because they were great philanthropists. The audit, led by Gaynor Legal, found commemorations of people connected with the slave trade are often shown without any accompanying context. Without this, the report read, the figures are presented solely as role models. Well, yes, you tell people the good things that they did because you want to encourage people to do similar good things and be philanthropists and care about your community and do what you can for your community, which is what these great people did, and they fought for their country as well, like Admiral Nelson and the Duke of Wellington. They are great heroes. So this attempt to attack them, I mean, it's self-hating, really, isn't it? We hear about self-hating Jews. Well, we have self-hating white people as well, and that's what's going on here, I think. Grandpa, I've gone on a little bit there, but we do have quite a long paragraph there that I was quoting from. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, going back to the first paragraph you read out of this, and of course, I have to start off by, again, just this is one of the things that drives me crazy about the Daily Mail. You have an entire paragraph that consists of one sentence. The paragraph is shorter than the headline of the article. I'm not sure they actually have an editorial board at the Daily Mail because it's done so poorly. But that having been set aside, because it's only one sentence long, I want to read that again. The plan is an effort to uplift the positive impacts of minority communities in Wales and change the alarming lack of diversity within public commemorations. That means nothing. This is what is referred to as a word spell. You know, this is word salad, because none of this means it. You read it and you think it means something, but look at it again. And when you really look at it critically and say, what does this mean? The plan is an effort to uplift the positive impacts of minority communities. What does that mean? Uplift that. What are you uplifting? What does that even, it doesn't mean, it doesn't mean anything. This is just empty rhetoric, word spells. It's just they want you to read through this and think it means something. But I think it's important to step back and say, hold on, this doesn't even mean anything. This is just literally gibberish. They want to change the alarming lack of diversity within public commemorations. Who's alarmed by this? Who's sounding the alarm? I don't see people are alarmed, but do people walk by this, random people walk by this and go, this is so alarming? You see what I'm saying? This, they say these things and you're supposed to just roll through them and say, oh, yeah, well, I mean, I could see their point of view. So one of our weaknesses, because when you try to consider things in good faith, you think that we naturally start from an assumption that the other person is trying to convey a point of view for us to understand, you know, and we try to figure out, you know, who's correct and whatnot. This sentence does, there's no meaning when you start really breaking down the words and looking at it. There's nothing with any meaning here. You can't, what would you define as uplifting the positive impact? Okay, define that for us. They don't. You know, they basically, it's just, you know, oh, we're uplifting. It's kind of like they have charities here. One of the big charities here in the U.S. is the Susan B. Komen Foundation, and they raise millions and millions of dollars from people. And their mission is to raise awareness of breast cancer. It's a goal that has no definition. Okay. You keep raising more money to who's not aware of it, who thinks it doesn't exist. You see, it's just there's no meaning here. Everything they say they want to address, there's no defined, how can you look at, it's kind of like Trump's war plans. Okay, what is winning? There is no definition of it. What is the accomplishment? What is the goal here? Well, they're uplifting positive impacts of the money. That means nothing. This is just word salad, and you're supposed to just look at it and say, well, they mean well. They're, you know, who's against uplifting somebody? We want to uplift people. Nobody wants to hold somebody down. But there's no actual meaning here. This is just empty nonsense. And when you step back and look at it and see it for what it is, you're just like, these people are full of it. They're full of male bovine excrement. You know, there's no actual meaning to anything. They're just throwing this around, you know, and just flexing on people. Now they're going to tear down these statues again, like it's still 2020 when the rest of the world has pretty much moved on from all of that. And this is going to look more and more silly because now people are facing real problems when their bills are going up through the roof and they look to their government, because ultimately people are going to look to the government to fix this stuff. The ultimate arbitrator, the people look at things as times getting really, really tough and they're going to get tougher. Ultimately, in the back of their mind, they think if it gets bad enough, the government is going to have to step in and do something. And how does that play to the legitimacy of this illegitimate system? When they look to the government in the back of their mind, they're thinking that, and then they look and say, well, let's see what the government's doing now. And this is what they're doing. This does not lead to people having confidence in the system that's already under, I would say, an ever-increasing legitimacy crisis. And this is literally Nero fiddling while Rome burns sort of tier stuff. And they're doubling down.
I think they're admitting that the system is a complete failure. They're admitting that multiculturalism is a complete failure because they're saying we want to uplift the black community. The only way we can uplift the black community is by destroying the white community's heroes. Well, that's just setting up a scene for civil strife, isn't it? They're admitting that in order to please one group, you have to harm another group. Whereas if every group had their own homogenous society in their own country, no groups would be being harmed. You wouldn't have to destroy anybody's history to please another group. And I'm not quite sure it's the black people that are calling for this either. As I say, I think it's self-hating white people that are calling for this. The research also found there were few Welsh people of black or Asian heritage commemorated across Wales. Well, as I say, even in the modern day, Wales is only 95% white. Go back 50 years and it would have been 99% white. That's why there's very few black or Asian heritage people commemorated across Wales. And what is this few Welsh people of black heritage? I mean, that's a non sequitur. You can't have a Welsh person of black heritage. You can have a British citizen of Welsh heritage. You can have a black person that lives in Wales, but you can't actually have a Welsh person of black heritage, because that's like saying a white ethnicity is the same as a black ethnicity. Welsh is an ethnicity. It's a people group. It's not a citizenship. It's a people group. So you can't actually have black or Asian Welsh people. You can have British people that are of black, or British citizens rather than people that are of black heritage, but you can't actually have Welsh people of black heritage. The audit did, however, unearth commemorations to anti-slavery activists across Wales, such as Henry Richard in Tregaron, street names for Samuel Romilly and the Pantcellyn Halls of Residence at Aberystwyth University. That's a little bit better there, pointing out the people that did away with slavery were actually white and British. After the publication of the audit's results, the Welsh Government ordered the establishment of the Anti-Racist Wales Action Plan, which seeks to tackle racism in Wales, eliminate hate crime, and support minority ethnic groups. And, this really highlights what you were saying there earlier, Grandpa, about there are all these really important things that the government should be doing. And instead of that, they're concerned about setting up an anti-racist Wales action plan when most of Wales doesn't even have any black people in that community to be racist towards in the first place. So I really don't see why this is so important. One of its listed goals is to work with public bodies to fully recognise their responsibility for setting the right historic narrative, promoting and delivering a balanced, authentic and decolonised account of the past. Or how about setting a correct historic narrative, a narrative that is based upon eyewitness accounts rather than a narrative that is based on modern day professors giving their opinions on the past rather than actually looking at eyewitness accounts from the past when these things were happening, which is what we do here at Radio Albion. All the content that we have on slavery is based upon eyewitness accounts that were written at the time when slavery was legal. And you don't see that. The people that are responsible for saying they want to set the right historic narrative, they don't ever look at the eyewitness reports. What they look at is Black Lives Matter promotional material, which is pretty much admitting that here. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on the Welsh Anti-Racist Wales Action Plan? Do you think that's a reasonable thing to be spending our time on over here in Wales?
No, it's just more stuff that doesn't have any meaning. To tackle racism in Wales, eliminate hate crime, and support minority ethnic groups. Again, I read that and I ask, what is that, though? I mean, okay, do you say this is what you're seeking to do, but what does that look? What does tackling racism, what is that? Is racism running across a football field and you're going to run over there and tackle them to the ground? What does that mean? And it drives me crazy because these people never get asked. If you had actual functioning media, they would get called out on this stuff. What does tackling that? There's no meaning. Nobody can even define what tackling racism is. Eliminate hate crime. Define this for us, because the hate crime over there is a constantly shifting narrative. You know, support minority ethnic groups. Oh, you're not against supporting. I don't think anybody's against supporting anybody. You know, support people in their good endeavors. But what does this actually mean? What do they want to do? If I was a reporter talking to this group, to these people, I would ask them, okay, give us some actual, what does this mean? Support minority ethnic groups. What are you literally going to do? It's highlighted here that the people that push this stuff don't actually build things. They just tear things down, and you see it here. They're talking about all this talk about supporting minority ethnic groups, tackling racism. There's no meaning here. What are they actually proposing to do? Tear down statues. That's it. They're not talking about building anything. They're not saying, okay, we're going to do this and create this, and then when we do this, everybody's lives will be better. You know, they might have a point if they did that, but they don't. They talk in this word salad that has no actual meaning. There's no definitions here to even work with. It's just words strung together to appeal emotionally to people. And then at the end of the day, the only thing they're bringing to the table is these statues and whatnot, these monuments that have been built over years. We're going to tear them down. That's at the end of the day, all they bring is we're going to destroy things. We're going to tear down monuments. That's all. They're not going to replace them with anything of meaning. They just want to tear down what exists, and that's always the goal. We've seen this over and over again. That's always the goal. They're not building anybody up. They're not lifting any. They're not elevating anybody. All they're bringing to the table is we look at this stuff, part of your culture, part of your history, part of your society, and we want to tear it down. And in order to do that, we're going to string together some nonsensical words that we couldn't even tell you. I guarantee you, if you ask them what any of this actually means, they couldn't answer it. They would just stumble around and talk in circles. At the end of the day, all they're bringing to the table is destruction, is tear things down. I want to go back to the point you were making just a minute ago about, you know, actually being Welsh. And it being an ethnicity. And I think a good way to illustrate this, because you get into this and people are so emotionally, you know, are programmed to emotionally respond to things and feel uncomfortable. I think a good way to put this is if I moved to Japan and lived in Japan for 30 years, it doesn't matter if I wear wooden shoes and a kimono every day, I'm never going to be Japanese. It doesn't matter if I speak Japanese fluently. It doesn't matter how I dress. It doesn't matter if I use chopsticks at every meal. It doesn't matter if I follow their customs to the letter and to the T. Nobody is ever, and it doesn't matter if I lived there my whole life, nobody is ever going to look at me and say, oh, Dan is totally a Japanese, because I'm not. I'm just literally not. I'm an outsider living there. I may be trying to, you know, be respectful and follow the customs, and that's all well and good. But at the end of the day, nobody is ever going to think I'm Japanese, because I'm literally not. You know, I can never be Japanese. I wear the clothes, I can dress up, and I can honor the customs and use the chopsticks. Nobody's ever going to say, yeah, he's 100% Japanese. That just, it's such a plain and simple fact that when you illustrate it that way, it makes sense. And you find yourself internally nodding your head, go, well, yeah, that makes sense. But people have been so emotionally programmed that when you talk about it, you know, in this context, as far as being Welsh, you know, a white ethnicity, you know, people feel uncomfortable, and you're not supposed to say that. But there's literally no difference. There's no hatred involved here. It's just stating the obvious. I could live in Japan my whole life. I can wear the clothes, follow the customs and all of that. And yet nobody's going to say that guy's 100% Japanese, because I literally could not be. And I think it bears some self-reflection to ask yourself, why is it then, when you make the point, as you have here, Sven, applying that to the Welsh people in this case, why is it that we don't automatically have that same basic understanding? Go, well, yeah, that makes sense. This person came from, you know, sub-Saharan Africa or wherever, you know, they might live there or whatever. It's not a downing on that person, but they're just simply never going to be Welsh, because they're just not. Just like in my illustration, I would never be Japanese. It doesn't mean all the Japanese would hate me. It just means that the reality is I'm not ever going to be Japanese. And the point here is to recognize how easy it is that people, how it is that people have internalized not looking at the truth. You know, they've internalized having a negative emotional reaction where they feel uncomfortable when someone like you, Sven, have just made this similarly obvious point about the Welsh ethnicity. And the reason it's important to recognize this is how they control people. Dude, this is one of their forms of control. And when you recognize it, you know, you can step back from it, and they don't have that power over you. And at the end of the day, we only have control over ourselves. And I think it's important to recognize how all of this works so that you aren't plugged in to their system.
Well, I think if they were to say that you were Japanese, that would be denying the existence of the Japanese people as an ethnic group, if you could be Japanese. So by saying that Welsh people can be black, they're effectively saying that the Welsh people do not exist as a distinct ethnic group. And they say here we need an anti-racist action plan and we need to eliminate hate crime. Well, who created a situation where racism could occur or a situation where hate crimes could occur? Well, it was the Welsh government, wasn't it? They were the ones that imported people of other races. If you don't have other people of other races there, then racism can't exist, can it? As I pointed out, 95% of Wales is white anyway. So if they seriously want to avoid any racism, well, just don't import any non-white people into any more white Welsh communities. And then you'll be limiting the situations where racism might arise to just the big multicultural cities that are multicultural in the first place. Prevent any more multiculturalism. That would be the best way to stop racism from spreading, I think, because you just prevent the conditions arising where racism might occur. A draft guidance issued by the Welsh Government's Deputy Minister for Arts, Dawn Bowden, is currently under consultation with a final version to be released later this month. She previously told the Welsh Parliament there are many such commemorations in Wales, and past decisions about who or what to honour, decisions that were often taken by a small elite, remain highly visible in our public spaces. Well, they would put these statues up because there was a public demand for them, because the person was seen as being such a good person. That's why the statues were created for them. It wasn't just a decision taken by a small elite. Many of them add character to our surroundings, and by offering a visible reminder of people and events in the past, they can prompt historical inquiry. But as the audit of commemoration in Wales has shown, that inquiry can sometimes lead us to dark places in our past, especially where figures linked with the slave trade and colonial exploitation are literally put on a pedestal. The final guidance issued is not legally binding, but merely intended as a best practice guide. But you just know that all the local authorities will be pointing to this because and saying, well, this is the best practice, is to just remove these things from public view. Miss Bowden has stressed she does not wish to censor British history through any removal of statues, but to ensure they are appropriately placed, placed out of public view, and are given context to enable for people to learn about the past figures while acknowledging their part in the horrific transatlantic slave trade and atrocities committed for the British Empire. So she's not talking about a context of why this person is being honoured, like they're a great philanthropist and they donated loads of money to the local area or they gave their life. But she just wants people to think of them as bad people, their connection to this horrific transatlantic slave trade and atrocities committed by the British Empire. You know, Western white people are the only people in the world to dishonour their ancestors like this and to think up ways that they can dishonour them. You know, it doesn't happen in Russia. I mean, the Russians have done terrible things to their own people, and yet they still honour them. They don't. There's no self-flagellation that goes on in Russia. It only seems to go on in the West that we attack our ancestors like this. I mean, we're told in the Bible that we should honour our father and our mother, and I think that applies here. Grandpa, any thoughts on this guidance here that we were just talking about?
Well, anytime you're talking about men, I mean, outside of Jesus Christ, any man is going to have faults and is going to commit errors. I mean, so you can go in and you can find something about anybody, you know, their own heroes that they try to elevate, they create and elevate. You can find a lot of faults in these people. And so anytime, you know, anybody can go and nitpick somebody and find things that they did that were morally wrong, because that's the state of fallen man. This line here in the first part that you read, though, it struck me because of the amount of projection. Decisions that were often taken by a small elite. And this is what they're doing. No one's asking why don't they just take a vote then? You know, if you're decrying this because these decisions were made by a small elite, then okay, make the list of the statues, make your argument here, and put it on the ballot, put it on a proposition. Let the people that live there decide, and then it's no longer been endorsed by a small, but they're not going to do that. This is projection. They want to be the small elite. They view themselves, the people that push this stuff, they view themselves as the small elite. And they want to be the elite, and they want to make the decision. That line is 100% pure projection. And again, if they're being honest, and they're not, and they say the problem is these decisions were made by a small elite, the people didn't get any input, then fine. Put it to a vote of the people. Say, this is what we want to do. These are the statues we want to take down. This is the actions we want to take. Get rid of the rhetoric. And just say, this is what we want to do. And then put it on vote. Let the people of Wales vote on it. And if they decide to tear the statues down, hey, there you go. Wasn't decided by a small elite. If they decide to leave them up, wasn't taken by you. You don't have that excuse. They have no intention. You know it. I know it. Everyone listening knows it. They don't have any intention to do that because they view themselves as the small elite. They view themselves as the ones that know better than everybody else. And they view the ones that ultimately ought to dictate what is, you know, what is and is not allowed. It's all about power. This isn't about, you know, oh, we want to make people feel. This is about having power over somebody else. They are the small elite in their minds, and they want to dictate to everybody else.
It is entirely projection of theirs to say that. Any time the public are asked about these things, they always say, well, we want to leave the place names and we want to leave the statues exactly as they are. That's why you end up with Black Lives Matter mobs pulling statues down like they did in Bristol, because the people that actually live there don't want to see the statue pulled down. And whenever they get asked, they say, well, we'd like to leave things how they are. Actually, we like to be reminded of our history. It could lead to further statue removals following the axing of a statue of a 19th century slave trader in Cardiff City Hall in 2020. And even that is inaccurate. They refer to these people as slave traders. They're not. They were put up for valour that was shown in battle, or they were put up for philanthropy. And that was what's important about them, not the fact that they were a slave trader. The statue of Sir Thomas Picton was pictured being boxed up and screened from public view before its removal, after councillors voted on the issue. There we go, that's the small elite. During the meeting, councillors said Picton's abhorrent behaviour as governor of Trinidad meant he was not deserving of a place in the Heroes of Wales collection, with 57 ruling in favour of the statue's removal, 5 voting against the move, and 9 abstaining. So it wasn't the people that voted for that, it was these councillors. Picton was a British Army officer killed during the Battle of Waterloo, and his statue had stood in the building for 104 years. There's actually lots of places that are named after Picton, and there are lots of monuments to the man. It wasn't just that he died in the Battle of Waterloo. He was generally seen as a very good person. And a lot of these monuments were put up but paid for by the people of that area. It's not that a small elite just stuck this statue there. Picton was also known as the Tyrant of Trinidad, and I don't understand where he was ever referred to as the Tyrant of Trinidad. That's probably some modern-day Black Lives Matter thing that calls him that, who directly used the slave trade to build up his wealth. I mean, he was basically these people were large employers. They employed lots of people. He was even found guilty of ordering the torture of a 14-year-old girl of mixed-race heritage, Louisa Calderon, in 1806, and this is because she was guilty of stealing. And bear in mind that at this time, people that were guilty of stealing could be killed for it, or they could be sent to Australia to work as a penal colony as a slave for decades, basically. So it's not that this girl was picked upon because she was mixed race. Anybody that was caught stealing at that time, there were extremely serious punishments for it. But of course, they look at this through glasses, today's spectacles, basically, where it would be wrong to torture somebody of 14 years old. But back then, we were putting 5-6-year-old children up chimneys, white children, as slaves. We didn't have the protection of young people that we have today. I believe, again, we have Picton as one of our greatest Britons. If you go and have a look at the Greatest Britain's archive, you'll find a lot of these people that we're talking about here, and you'll find that we did podcasts on them, talking about the things that they did and why they were seen as such great people. Grandpa, any thoughts on this you want to add?
A quick question. Do you happen to be familiar what the torture consisted of?
No, I don't. Not sure.
Okay, I don't. I'm assuming it was probably something like lashing, which you know, then would beg the question, because they make it a point. They're trying to illustrate this as this 14-year-old girl of mixed race heritage was the only one that ever underwent this. And I seriously doubt that was the case. But again, you brought up a good point. You have to question everything that is written in these sorts of articles. As, for instance, they make the assertion, you're supposed to just read through this and say, oh, it's true then. You know, everybody thinks this. Man, I didn't know it. You didn't know it. You know, and you're pretty well-versed in, you know, obviously much more well-versed in this sort of history than I am. But they make the statement, Picton was known as the tyrant of Trinidad. You're supposed to read that and go, oh, well, I didn't know that, but I guess that's what he's known as. And that's what most people do, and they're counting on that. You can't take them at their word for anything because they're liars. You read that and you have to stop and say, okay, wait a minute. He's known as the tyrant of Trinidad by who? Who says that? You know, who? You know, you're supposed to just read that and go, oh, I guess I didn't know that. But nobody wants to speak up and question it. And they know this because you'll think you're stupid. You know, if this was a public forum and they were saying this out loud, no one in the audience wants to stop and say, wait a minute, I've never heard this before. Who says that? Because people naturally don't want to speak up because they're afraid that'll make them look stupid. Maybe everybody does know this and I'm the only one. It's a question you have to ask. Okay, who's called him this? And as I said, you're much more versed in this history. You're very well versed in British history. And you don't know it. So that tells me right off the bat that not everybody has known him as it. They probably, yeah, again, who? And I bet if you ask the person writing the article, they couldn't answer it. They throw this stuff out there and you're just supposed to accept it. Don't ever accept anything these people say at face value because they lie. They have a long track record of lying and manipulation. And that these articles are full of just that, lying and manipulation. He's known as the tyrant of Trinidad. Okay, by who? Who says that? We want to know. You've made the assertion. Tell us who's called him that. I bet they couldn't even answer it. You know, she was tortured. They don't tell us what the torture consisted of. That's a relevant point. What was the torture and what was the context? They didn't give us the context. Thankfully, you were able to give us the context of what this punishment was, you know, or why the punishment was meted out. And I'm not defending the punishment. I don't think people should be lashed with a whip for stealing. But that's my own view, not the view in the context of that time. And how often were these punishments meted out and to whom? Because I seriously doubt this one girl. You're supposed to come away with the impression that he looked at this mixed race girl and said, I don't like this mixed race girl. Let's whip her, or whatever it is the punishment was, because they couldn't bother to tell us in the article. You know, you're supposed to just come away with, wow, he just saw her and didn't like because she was mixed race, so he tortured her. That doesn't make any sense. So we know it's bullocks. And you've already pointed out she was caught stealing. Okay, so what was the punishment? And then that leads to the question, who else was punished in the same way? I'd be willing to bet it was a pretty common punishment. But you see, that deflates the whole narrative, the whole spell they're trying to cast on it, on the whole rhetorical construct that this article is designed to put together. And when you see it, you see this for what it is. This is just gross propaganda. This is all. There's no information at all in this article except for revealing what the tiny elite here, as you pointed out, it wasn't everybody got to vote on this. It was less than 100 people. It was 50 something people voted, and they get to decide for everybody. It really, at the end of the day, it's all very quite telling.
Well, one person's tyrant may well be somebody else's hero. We're talking about the fact that he was a hero to the Welsh people. Why would they care if somebody out in Trinidad called him the tyrant of Trinidad? He's not being honoured for the way he treated people in Trinidad. He's being honoured for the way that he treated the people in Wales. And as I don't think anybody called him a tyrant. I mean, you had large landowners at the time that employed large numbers of people and looked after large numbers of people. And if you look at what the slaves had to say back then, they were very thankful that everything was being provided for them. Mainly, it's not very often you find ones that weren't very happy with what they had. It's just that we look at them today and say, oh, that's because you just really didn't know the truth, didn't know that you were being used and oppressed. You know, well, at the time, they didn't see themselves as used and oppressed. They saw themselves as being well looked after, much better looked after than they were when they were in Africa. After the initial results of the audit were published, Welsh First Minister Mark Drakeford said, while the tragic killing of George Floyd happened almost 4,000 miles away, it sparked global action that shone a light on racial inequality in society today. Again, this was a black guy that died, effectively, while being arrested. And we're told, oh, he was unarmed and this police officer deliberately killed him. And we don't have that over here in Britain. We don't have large numbers of black people that end up dying at the hands of the police. We have very, very few. And the ones that we do hear about, there are huge investigations. And most of the time, it turns out that the black person was resisting arrest in some way or trying to run over the police officer in a car. That's often what happens. We know what happened here is that George Floyd was actually died of a drug overdose. But they couldn't say that in the court because they knew that if they did say that and if they did find the police officer innocent, the city would have gone up in flames. And that's what was being threatened. And that's why the guy was found guilty, despite all the evidence that George Floyd was actually dying of a drug overdose. That inequality exists in Welsh society too, says Drakeford. And we must work towards a Wales which is more equal. As I say, it's only 5% non-white. It's probably only about 2% black in Wales. To help us to do this, we need a clear understanding of the legacies of the slave trade and the British Empire. This audit provides important evidence which helps us establish an honest picture of our history. Well, isn't the eyewitness reports then the honest picture? This is not about rewriting our past or naming and shaming. It is about learning from the events of the past. It is an opportunity for us to establish a mature relationship with our history and find a heritage which can be shared by us all. And this is the nonsense. You can't have a shared heritage by everyone, can you? Because some people do things, other people don't do things. You can't come out with a history that's going to please everybody. I mean, history is his story. It's an individual's story. It's not the story of a group of disparate individuals. It's the story of one individual. You're not going to find a history that can be shared by everyone, that everyone is happy with. He says, this is the first stage of a much bigger piece of work which will consider how we move forward with this information as we seek to honour and celebrate our diverse communities. As I say, these tiny minorities in Wales. I mean, why is it seen as such an important thing that they have to destroy Welsh history in order to please the 5% of the population of Wales that isn't white? Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
Well, appropriately enough, the article ends with a whole barrage of, again, meaningless terms. Establish a mature relationship. Somebody tell me what that means. You can't. They can't. Because it doesn't mean anything. You know, they're just throwing this stuff out there, and you're supposed to say, oh, well, that sounds good. We're establishing a mature relationship. A mature relationship. You're not married to that. What is that even? Don't rack your brain. It doesn't mean anything. The positive note to end on here, these are made up problems for a society that has abundance. You can do this stuff. A society can tolerate this nonsense when things are really good. You know, they can have their little committees and work on these invented problems as they try to destroy things when the people by and large feel like they're fairly financially well off. You know, the economy's doing well. They're doing well personally. They feel secure. They've got housing. Their electric bills are paid and so on and so forth. Those days are quickly coming to an end. And this sort of nonsense, I think, inevitably is going to start coming to an end too. Because, again, as things get worse, people try to comfort themselves with thinking, well, at some point, the government will find some way to fix this. They're going to have to address my problems because people identify with this stuff on a personal level. Whether that's correct or not is a topic for another day, but that's how people identify and relate to politics and things. And when they look to the government and say, okay, how are you going to fix my problem? How are you going to address the fact that I can't afford to eat? I can't afford to heat my house in the wintertime. And they're talking about tearing down statues. You know, see, these are invented problems to impose on a society where everybody will tolerate it because things are going well. You're going to find moving forward as things continue to get worse, there's going to be a lot less tolerance for this sort of nonsense, you know, for this sort of gibberish. When people's only comfort is they keep thinking, well, at some point the government has to address these problems, my problems. And this is the sort of crap they're putting out. I don't care how many word salad articles you put out in the Daily Mail. People ain't going to have time for all that, and they're not going to tolerate it. And this is just the sort of thing of just continue to accelerate the collapse of a system that's illegitimate, has been illegitimate for a long time. So see, there's your piece of good news to wrap up on.
Well, it is, isn't it? I mean, it does. It shows that we must be living in a time of great abundance if we can waste our time on virtue signaling projects like that. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.